beautiful ladies in the building, and we're going to talk today about beauty and some of the unrealistic expectations that are placed on specifically Black women and how we, you know, have to live up to that. So the first thing I would love to just kind of ease into is your definition of beauty. And Maya, I'll get you first.
For me, beauty is more about your inner feeling about yourself. So I equate beauty to your feeling of confidence and your perception of how you outwardly see things. Not necessarily the physical attributes associated with how people perceive beauty, but the characteristics of what embodies beauty in terms of giving and kindness and sharing. All those things are beautiful to me. And I think when you embody that, you emulate that, that is beauty personified. And I think that helps you make you feel, makes you feel better about yourself and makes you feel much more beautiful.
Nice.
Yeah, I think you stole some of my thoughts there. Maybe it's the brown lineage.
It's the brown connection.
The same wavelength. But I would agree. I think beauty is more of a feeling of self-worth and then portraying that in your outward existence and just having an overall feeling of positivity about yourself, how you move through the world, and then everybody and things that you come into contact with. So I definitely think it's more of a feeling than something that's necessarily visual.
Well, I definitely agree with you guys on that. The next question is really about how beauty affects your self-esteem, or do you think self-esteem affects beauty? Because I've heard, you know, there have been people that you're like, oh, wow, they're so beautiful. And I don't know if it's the inside out or the outside in. Sometimes I just project that. So what are your thoughts on, and can you give me an example of, you know, maybe a celebrity or someone that you know that projects either way?
I think it's your self-esteem. I think when you feel good about yourself and you feel that you're valuable, then you feel much more beautiful. And I think it comes across and everyone can see that outward projection of yourself.
Yeah.
I think for me, when I think about a celebrity who is beautiful, it's so funny because I watched Red Table Talk with Jada Pinkett Smith, and I watched it last night with Alicia Keys on there, and she talked about how people, you know, the impression of her is that people think she's happy all the time.
Okay.
And that she's always smiling, and that she should never have a bad moment, that she shouldn't swear. And, you know, she talked about how sometimes that affects her self-worth and how people perceive her, but does that make her feel any less beautiful? Or does that define her beauty? And I think it goes back to people have an external image and projection of you. But again, it goes back to your self-esteem and how you see yourself.
Yeah.
Even if she's out in public and she's not wearing any makeup and people are like, girl, you look bad. That doesn't mean that she's left beautiful, and that didn't attack her self-esteem or her self-worth. So I think it's how you feel about yourself. That's what makes you beautiful. No makeup, makeup. I'm an advocate of good beauty. My no foundation Fridays. And when I'm not out in my full-on face, I don't think I'm feeling less beautiful. So I think it's about how you feel with your inner confidence.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, how many celebrities have you seen, or not even celebrities, just people out in the world that may not be what the traditional norm of beauty, but something about them makes them really attractive?
Yes.
You know, whether it's their just the light that they portray or their sense of humor. So I think it definitely comes from that feeling from within that makes people beautiful.
Yeah.
As opposed to the external.
Do you think you've always felt that way? Like in your younger self? Do you?
No.
But I don't know if that's you or if that's how people make you feel.
Huh.
Like in my family, I have a sister. And I have several sisters, but I have a sister I grew up with, and she's lighter complexion than I am, I would say. We both have curly hair, but she's got the silkier curly hair, and she's got more of what, you know, in African-American community, we'll say she's got the refined features.
Mm.
And I always felt like I was the ugly child compared to her, because I was darker, I was gangly, I was tomboyish. I got my daddy's nose, so I had the wider nose, and nobody ever really told me I was pretty as a child. You know, I was cute, but she was the pretty child. Wow. So I think people didn't make me feel like I was beautiful. I don't think I came into confidence until college. So I think, I don't know if it's you think you're not beautiful or if the society around you tells you what beauty is and you believe that for such a long time.
Yeah, it's funny. When we had a good beauty conversation several months ago, I had a picture of myself as a child. I grew up, I don't have any siblings, but I grew up with five girl cousins. We were all very close in age, and I always felt like I was the darker and less attractive cousin. And I showed the picture to Kimberly and some of the other women there, and I said, can you pick me out in this picture? And none of them could. They all thought I was one of my, you know, younger, lighter skinned cousins. So it's just interesting. I mean, it took me a long time before I felt I was beautiful. And I know that probably sounds maybe conceited to say that you think you're beautiful, but it's not from an external sense. It's that confidence. And whereas you said you felt it in college, I don't think I felt it until my 30s when I felt like so confident that my definition of beauty was more as in was I portraying my best self. So if I'm portraying my best self, and it could mean, yes, it means I'm having a good hair day or I think my makeup looks good, but it's other things too. That's when I feel beautiful. And it has nothing to do with comparing myself to, you know, someone walking down the street who may be a size zero or someone who's younger. It's whether I feel like I'm my best version of myself that day. But it took me a long time to get there.
Wow. I mean, I was going to save this for later, but we have jumped right into it. So, I don't know if you've heard recently, Lupita stated that colorism is the sister to racism. And you both just talked about not feeling beautiful because of, you both talked about skin.
Yes.
And I would love to talk about this issue of colorism because in some places people think it doesn't exist anymore, that we've so passed this because we embrace ourselves and our beauty. But I think it definitely is one of those hidden secrets within our community that we keep kind of in the closet and talk amongst ourselves. But I think it's an opportunity that we can heal one another because we understand the pain that each other goes through. And I definitely have some issues with skin, and like you said, in our new it launched today on goodbeauty.com, the first episode talking about colorism. But I would love to hear your thoughts on, do you think it exists today, and then are there ways that we should change the narrative, and how can we do that?
Oh, that's a tough one.
I know, that's why you're here.
Well, you know, it's tough because in my marketing with my consultancy, I have a client that has a skincare line that's promoting, I'm going to say, skin health and skin clarification. But in Africa, it's skin lightening. Mm-hmm. And for them, it takes on a different tone than what it does here in the United States. And having to talk with the customers on social media and really trying to push education about, no, it's about healthy skin. Mm-hmm. It's about even tone. It's about clearing hyperpigmentation. It's not really about taking my skin color three shades lighter, trying to go from Lupita to Rihanna, because that ain't going to happen. And it's just not realistic.
Yeah.
But it's interesting talking to them and listening to their perceptions of skin color, and that the color is what makes you beautiful. And they always come on my page on Instagram and say, I love your skin color. And I'm like, that's genetics. I can't do anything about that. You know, because it's kind of like, well, how do you respond to a comment like that? Everything that goes into what makes up a person of color's skin tone. But for them, colorism exists in their country. If you're dark skinned, you're not perceived to be as attractive. Their goal is that they want to get to, I'm going to call it, pecan tan brown or lighter.
Okay.
That's their aspiration. They want to have that light complexion, even tone. I think here in the United States, we have levels of colorism. I don't think it's ever going to really go away because I think, unfortunately, within our community, it's something that I think we manifest ourselves.
Okay.
But I do like when I look at some of maybe the younger generation that's coming up, that they seem to be a little bit broader in their mindset.
Okay.
And because it's like, you know, racism is learned. I think colorism is learned.
Yeah.
I think, you know, when you got the older grandparents, you know, in the South, we used to be like, you know, that baby's just wasted yellow. And wasted yellow is when you're...
I've never heard that term.
That's a Southern term. Wasted yellow is when you are light complexion, but you don't have that, you don't have that textured hair.
Wow.
So you don't have what they call good hair in the South. So that's wasted yellow. So as long as we don't have that mindset right. being passed down to the generations, then I think the generations that are coming up can hopefully move forward and move past the colorist mindset.
Yeah, I agree with what you said. I definitely feel like the younger generation, I have a 14, almost 14-year-old daughter. I don't think for them it's even a thought necessarily, but I definitely remember growing up where my great aunts and my grandparents and even my mom sometimes they'd be like, "Oh, you know, stay out of the sun; you're going to get too dark."
And, yes,
you know, those type of comments, and I don't even think they thought about, you know, what that was saying or, you know, how
it would impact
negative
you?
And how it would impact self-esteem. But I definitely think nowadays darker skin tones are celebrated.
They're beautiful.
I think, absolutely, as they should be. I mean, we come in so many different shades. Every race does. Everybody comes differently. But I definitely still think there's colorism outside of the Black community. At least in my opinion, I think maybe darker skin is seen as still kind of scarier. Maybe lighter skin seems more palatable to some people.
Is it lighter skinned, or is it the perception of the total package of the features and the presentation? Is that what people perceive outside of the African American community as being less threatening or intimidating?
I think everybody makes a snap judgment based on first seeing someone.
Yeah.
Now, of course, if I was sitting here and, you know, you could see my pants and they were hanging off and, I don't know, whatever people, you know, will judge upon first appearance. I still think that initial sight of someone who's, you know, a deep, dark chocolate versus someone that's lighter skin, people walking down the street are going to have a different reaction, in my opinion. And then, yes, you go to those other things. Do they look like they have a professional job? Which, you know, you really can't tell. Someone could be an artistic position and be dressed more casually, or, you know, vice versa. So I think that there is.
Yeah, I would agree that I think that colorism probably is still pretty heavy in our community. And the reason I say that, and maybe not in our immediate family, like you don't hear those old Southern town, you know, phrases that I'd never even heard, but the pain is still there. I've heard sentiments similar to that, but even like I mentioned, Lupita, she's put out this book about kind of where, you know, she feels like in Hollywood, and I don't want to quote her, but, you know, colorism is still a big part. And I think the Most Beautiful Women in the World, you know, they did this rating that came out, and, you know, not many were, you know, darker skin. I think Beyonce was number two, and the girl Hadid is number one, which, I mean, when you look at them, their skin tones are very similar. But I do think there is an issue within our community, and I would say that the thing that I would love for us to stop doing is just that, like, when you refer to someone light, not call them fair skin, or, you know, describe it by the tone, or when we talked about hair texture, mm-hmm. call it curly or whatever. Don't call it good versus bad, you know. So those are the things that are just really needed within our own community. So I'm going to shift a little bit to talk about kind of the outside influences. I'm not sure if you guys have heard about this whole Crown Act that's been passed. I think it was passed first in California, and now many states are starting to, you know, put the bill forward to get passed. But I'm just, I guess, appalled that Black women are the only women that are judged so harshly about our beauty, and the first thing is our hair. So the Crown Act was, you know, to prevent discrimination in the workplace because of a hairstyle, dreads, natural, those things. So I would like for you guys to tell me, what are the things that are in society that you believe that really are still very damaging to Black women? And it could be your thoughts on the Crown Act or any other thing that I just have, I'm not privy to. This is not an easy one, because there are things.
I guess I can't think of any others at the moment, so I guess I'll talk about the Crown Act. I mean, can you think of any other ethnicity where their hairstyle or just their way of being is thought to make people feel threatened or uncomfortable? Like, just even saying that sounds crazy. Like,
yeah.
Let's just think in terms of Indian women who tend to have, you know, long, straight, dark hair. Would anyone ever think to say, that makes me uncomfortable, the fact that your hair is, you know, very, very long, or you have it pulled back a certain way? It's just, it's insane to
really
think that at this point in time we're having those types of conversations and that there has to be, you know, legislation around it.
Has anyone ever said to you, or have you ever, well, let me say this. Has anyone that's non-Black ever asked you to touch your hair?
Yes.
Yes.
I've had that.
And I thought, you know, that kind of starts too. Like, that to me is so, you know, intrusive of my space. And I've had so many times, and not just in the U.S., like, I've traveled abroad, and people have asked me, especially when my hair was really short.
Right.
And curly, I guess they want to, I mean, they were like, can I touch your hair? So hair, for some reason, we are definitely a threat when it comes to that, for some reason.
I think we're a threat, but I think for some reason we're fascinating too, because as women of color, we change our hair frequently. I know I do. I can go from braids to natural to weave to whatever fits
anything.
My mood.
Yeah, we're so flexible.
And I think that is part of somewhat of the amazement of let me touch it, because I don't think it's understood, like, yes, we have that flexibility to do this.
We're magic.
But it's not ours. It's ours because we bought it, but it's not ours because we didn't grow it. And we're cool with that. And I almost wonder if it's a little bit of envy because of the freedom and the flexibility that we have to be ourselves and to make these changes that seem like an anomaly to other people. Because they don't understand it, because they don't have that freedom and that flexibility.
Yeah, the confidence to be different.
Yes.
The confidence to be different.
That's what I tell my daughter about her hair, even though now she's very much a tomboy, and you'll never see it. She has a gray headband on every day. She has 20,000 of them. Pulls it back in a bun. But
a girl after my own heart.
Yeah, I hope she'll eventually have it, you know, beautiful like yours instead of hidden. But I talked to her about that, you know, but the curiosity being, I think, envy on a lot of levels. The fact that, yeah, she can wear it out and curly, she can wear it in a bun, she can wear it straight like mine. But I think where it becomes problematic is when people think that it's okay to touch you.
Agree. To invade your
space.
Yeah,
like, what makes them think that they have the right to come into your space and touch you?
Yes.
Like, that feeling is highly concerning. Do they feel like I'm less valued, less of a person because, you know, that they can, you know, overreach that boundary?
So I agree. I was at our local gym a couple months back during the summer, and I watched this little black girl who was about maybe 7 or 8. She was old enough, but she wasn't old enough to have her voice yet. And then there were bigger, older white girls around her, and they were all taking a piece of her hair, and they were like turning it to, like, she had like her hair in braids, but it was her hair, it wasn't like extensions, but they were like turning it and then letting it fall, and so I was going around the track, and as I kept noticing it, it was starting to really bubble and bother me, because I felt, one, she doesn't have a voice, and even if, you know, she wants them to stop, she's never going to say it. And, you know, part of her being probably the only black child in that area, she probably wanted to fit in, and I'm making some assumptions. So I went downstairs and talked to the counselor, and of course the counselor was white, and she was very receptive. And first she thought it was my child, and I said, no, I'm speaking on behalf of all the little black girls that probably could not speak for themselves, and they should not touch her hair. And, you know, and I think that's something you should probably address with her mom, just to let her know. And I'm sure the little black girl didn't, those may have been her friends, but it really bothered me. And having that only my own personal experience with hair, mm-hmm. I just felt like, you know, it was time for me to, you know, stand up for that little black girl, because I felt maybe sometimes I didn't stand up for myself. So definitely appreciate. So if we had to get a message out there, it would be, don't touch a black woman's hair. You know, without permission, of course, without permission, because you never know. It could be a weave up in there or whatever, but it's my prerogative.
Yes, true. But I don't even know if I want you asking permission either. Just say your hair looks nice.
And leave it alone.
And leave it alone. Right there.
I agree.
I'm not a, you know, a show pet at the zoo or something.
Not a show pet. How sad that she is not a show pet. So we could transition a little bit from hair to talk about how do you feel about it, physical beauty versus intellect? And have you found that, and I will say there is, you know, we talk about white privilege. I believe that there is something in that beauty privilege as well. And I would love your thought on that. I know it's a little deep.
I'm going to come back and ask you about what you mean by beauty privilege.
Okay.
Intellect versus beauty, I say intellect all day long.
Yes.
Your traditional things that people might think are beautiful about you, whether it's your smooth skin or your long hair, all of that one day is going to be gone, and nobody's going to care.
Absolutely.
About, you know, if you're fortunate enough to live to the age of 90, you're not going to look like, you know, Gigi Hadid or
Beyonce. Beyonce is not going to look like Beyonce.
Yeah, exactly. But I think having the intellect will always give you that confidence when you walk into any room, because you're able to, you know, stand toe to toe with anybody about whatever topic, or at least feeling like you can. So I'd say intellect all day. But I'm going to throw it back to you. And what's beauty privilege?
I feel like there have been times in corporate America that I've seen or heard about this because certain people look a certain way, and not necessarily black and white, mm-hmm. just because they are more appealing, they rise to the top when there may not be as much intellectual horsepower. And I was watching a show the other day on OWN about, it was all around black women having a conversation, mm-hmm. and I was so intrigued by Stacey Abrams, because she talked about, like, this is my package, you know, I am, you know, natural, you know, she was like, you know, maybe a little fluffy, and I don't come in the standard way, but she's starting to break down those barriers. And I was really like, I applauded her, because there is this kind of feeling that I've seen in corporate that, because you may look a certain way, there is an assumption of, intelligence, but underneath there may not be. And those who may not look that certain way may be passed aside.
Yeah, I'm going to go. I think it goes back to confidence.
Okay.
That's just my opinion. I think if you feel good about yourself, mm-hmm. and you know your knowledge, you'll portray that, and people will gravitate towards you,
okay.
and be successful. I think there might be a sense of some people might, you know, that the shiny little ball of the more youthful or traditionally beautiful person. I think that could happen for a short period of time, but I don't think that that's sustainable. I mean, I have a situation at work. I started a new job, and pretty much at the same time, this young girl, I'd say she's probably 20 years younger than me, very traditionally beautiful, long brown hair. She's a more junior role, but we started around the same time, so we were kind of going through that onboarding process at the same time. And I remember at first, it seemed like people seemed to kind of gravitate towards her because she's young and she's very energetic and, you know, lots of ideas, but it wore off.
Yeah.
That wears off. Like the happy puppy, you know, shiny little ball, you know, it wears off, and that's where the substance and the confidence, that's what, you know, will end up pushing you ahead, I think.
So, Maya, do you think that beauty can affect success in life, or like Janelle, you think it may wear off?
I think anything that looks shiny eventually wears off regardless. I agree. Intelligence to me is beautiful, and I think that is always what's going to persevere and prevail. I think, unfortunately, you have situations and careers that appearance may be deemed more worthy. And so, therefore, that might catapult you to the top over intelligence. But again, I think that also goes back to whatever that environment is and the subjectivity that surrounds it. So I think that's the challenge. It's almost like for instance, we worked at L'Oreal.
Yes.
And beauty company, we loved it. I think we were fortunate. We worked in the multicultural marketing division, and you know, it was pretty much all black people. But in comparison to our sister division counterparts, we did notice that there was a difference in mm-hmm. how the young African-American professionals in the Maybellines and the L'Oreal Paris looked versus those of us that were in the multicultural division. And we also noticed that they seemed to advance differently than we did.
Okay.
And I do feel like in that case, and not to say that they weren't intelligent, because we were all women that had advanced degrees.
Yeah.
But I can't say that they knew any more than we did.
Got it.
They were any better at marketing than what we were. So, but they had that look that we called the L'Oreal look back then. And those are the things that help propel them forward and give them much more visibility and advancement.
I would definitely say that can help, but I'm with you, Janelle. Like, I feel like I tell my daughter that you didn't do anything, you know, to, you know, attribute to what you look like. That's just genetics.
Yes.
From your mom and from your dad. However, your intellect, you know, is what will push you forward. That's what you control. You don't control what you look like, but how you present yourself in the world appear, you know, it definitely makes a difference. So we're going to shift a little bit, make it a little lighter in the building, and talk about beauty from, well, we talked about when you guys first felt beautiful. So that always is my question. And I know you said it was in your 30s, and Maya, you
started
were like
feeling it more in college. But I think in college I felt that I was coming into my own.
Yeah.
Because that was me moving away from home and also me taking control of my life.
Yeah.
And my identity and how I wanted to be perceived. Whereas I do think when you're in high school, middle school, so on and so forth, that's kind of controlled.
Yeah.
Somewhat by the environment around you.
Absolutely. So now let's talk about trends. Are there any beauty trends that you've tried, fashion, beauty, style, whatever, that you tried and that you like, wish you never, ever set foot in, you know, did not do that? Has there been something you're like, oh, I've got to try this, and then after it was like, Lord, have mercy?
Well, it doesn't count if other people told you that you should, instead of you discovering on your own that that was a bad
move.
I have a picture from when my husband and I were first dating. He has a sister who's 10 years younger than him.
Okay.
And we went to her sweet 16 birthday party. And I don't know what type of foundation I was wearing, but I literally looked like a mime. My face, it was so off. And I happened to have a beret on also. I need to dig out this picture.
Please.
But back then, I used to be into a lot of kind of heavy foundations, clearly unmatched. And that was, that was a no-no. Now I try, it's all about the skin.
Yeah.
And just hide, I pretty much only wear a little concealer here or there.
Yeah.
And try and keep my skin as best as it could be. But I think that was that heavy, thick foundation.
Cakey.
Yeah.
What about you, Maya?
I think I'm always on trend.
Sister girl.
You know.
Well, when you were younger, Maya, before you became this beauty icon that I know.
Beauty icon. You know what? I think as people, we have to sometimes take risks.
Yeah.
And step out of our comfort zones. And I'm not one who's afraid to push the envelope. Now, sometimes the envelope may have gone to left.
Got it.
But you know what? Instead of looking at it as a bad experience, it was a learning experience to know, you know what? Girl, that was not your look.
That was not your color.
You know, and I my one mistake.
Okay. We got one here.
Being in Soft Sheen Carson on Dark and Lovely Permanent Hair Color, I used to try every hair color that I had. You know, we had 20 shades in the line. Red was not my look.
Did people tell you you reminded them of Sierra?
Somebody, because it was not me.
I thought you were going to say Ronald McDonald.
No, it was just not a good look. And that, you know, and that's the thing you learn, that you learn with age. You learn what colors work better with your skin tone, your undertones, and red was not a color for my undertone. But you could not tell me back then I was not cute.
So well, we need to see photographs.
I need to see photographs.
I think I've gotten rid of all the photographs. Yes.
I may have one, so you're going to have to give me some money for me not to show that. But I was in my only, my biggest, beauty, blunder. Growing up with curly hair was not perceived in my, area as beautiful. People actually, I was desperate always to have straight hair. My mom has straight hair. I think maybe that drove that, but I wanted straight hair, and I think that was where the blunder. I was trying everything I could
to straighten
my hair out, and it was just, it would break off. It would grow back, thank God, but then I was in such desperate need, and this was before really I knew how to take care of my hair, so it was just always a horrible thing. And I don't think until I was in college, so I embraced my curly hair, and I actually said, I had t-shirts that said I was happy to be nappy. I just really said, this is it, and I've got to live with it. So
but your hair's not nappy.
Well, I guess I perceived it as, and I still struggle
with not managing my
hair. I do, and that's just my own personal, I know I'm, I admit that if I could have long my hair straight, I think I would be happier. But we always are. We want what we don't have. When I straighten my hair out, I do feel very glamorous. But this, I just kind of feel
I love you with your curly hair. I have always loved it curly. Even when you had it short, I thought that was just such a sophisticated, savvy look.
That was hard to take care of.
But one thing that you do, and I think that is good, is that you eventually get to where you embrace who you are.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we all have to start doing, is embracing who we are and stop going against the grain of who we are. And I think that's where our struggles with the hair texture constantly comes in.
Yeah.
I don't even think I knew my hair was curling until I got to
my 30s, because my mother, you know, it was pressed on Sunday mornings before church, or, you know, it was always in ponytails. And then as soon as I got to 11, she put a perm in it.
Yeah.
So then it was just the relaxing. But then, you know, as you get older, you begin to realize that, you know, these some things that just aren't working for
yeah.
me. And you're going against the grain of who you are naturally.
Yeah.
And then that's, I think that's what we're doing now to, we're unraveling all of these things, society as a whole, especially black women, we're unraveling all these things that have been put in front of us as what's beautiful. And we're having to redefine what beauty is for us.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, Maya. And the question I have for you ladies are, like, what are those secret things that you say to yourself about beauty? And for one, that's what I was talking about later. Like, in my kind of my private moments, I still desire, or I still feel that beauty for me, where I feel like I look my best, is if my hair was straight. Like, I definitely, that those are my, like, secret moments. I'm like, ah. But then, of course, you know, I'm mature now, so I've gotten there where I'll say, listen, this is, you know, if I have my hair straight, it's only going to be for a couple of days, because I'm not willing to damage my hair in order to have a certain look. Like, I can, you know,
girl,
so.
You can get straight hair. It's called a weave. Weave it or wig it. You can get straight hair.
I may try that too. Well, you know, I'm not against a good old straight weave.
I find this discussion about hair curly versus straight, I find it very interesting, because I almost feel like with, you know, the whole natural movement, there's almost like this backlash if you do straight. Like, my hair, this is my hair. This is... Yes. Not straight. I don't have a perm. This is my hair. I use a blow dryer. Yes, I use a flat iron. But to me, it's still natural.
Yeah.
I think that, like, I'm not embracing my natural self because, I mean, like, to me, this is my hair. If I were to wear my hair out curly the way it is when I'm first out of the shower, to me, that would not be me. That's just not the way I wear my hair.
Yeah.
So I just find the discussion interesting.
And again, we're coming full circle. Like, we're the only people in society that we get judged by others about our beauty choices, hair, skin, whatever. And then we judge each other about our beauty choices, which is so, like, again, this is why we have these conversations, to help one another to heal our, you know, to heal the pain, because there is pain associated with it, some stronger than others. I mean, I do remember as a child just really just rejecting something that was so natural that I could not change. And everything about me, like, I rejected my hair, my skin complexion, because I am the darkest person within my family. I rejected my freckles. Like, there was all this stuff. And I'm surprised that I have so much self-esteem, but I will definitely owe that to my mom, because even throughout the stages, even though she looked different from me, I still felt like she was still telling me that I was beautiful and I was enough and I was worth it. So, you know, I hope that's what we continue to give to our daughters, our nieces,
yes.
To appreciate.
And so, it's funny, I think some of those things you just named, I think, are some of the most beautiful things about you. Like, your freckles, and you have gorgeous skin tone, your hair. I think you really, there's things that are, you know, I always tell my daughter, I don't want to be called normal. I don't want to ever feel like I'm kind of fitting in with her. I just like being myself. And partly I'm telling her that as a, you know, a mantra for her to appreciate herself and her own individuality. But most of, I mean, it's true. She always talks about how I'm so different from the other moms. And I don't even know in what way, but I love that. Like, I never... You know, I never want to feel like I'm just going with the flow. Mm-hmm. And I know that's totally opposite of the way that I felt when I was younger, even in my 20s.
Got it. So. That's wonderful. I know our time is wrapping up, so I'm going to throw it back to you ladies. Give me one of your beauty tips that you can share with, like, the audience or the viewers. Beauty tips that, like, the one thing, like, I don't care what, I will always do, or this is something that sets me apart in my beauty regimen. Besides using good beauty, of course.
Yes, we have that good beauty glow.
Yes.
I will always wear lipstick.
Okay.
No matter what I'm doing.
True.
Whether I'm outside running, I'm going to the gym, or whatever, because I feel like color brightens up your face. And we should not be afraid to wear color, whether it's a nice, vibrant pink, a bold red, pretty purple, or even just a natural nude. Just go out there and have something on your lip, because you know what? That could be all the makeup you need sometimes.
Good tip. And I can vouch, Maya, I've never seen you without, except when you wake up, baby.
And even then, I'm like, leave some on his face.
Give my lipstick. Jay.
Oh, I'm feeling inspired. Sometimes I will actually walk out without forgetting lipstick. I'll put everything else on and I'll be like, no lips. I have to go take it back to the skincare and sunscreen. I mean, to me, if I do nothing else, I have to wear sunscreen. Even if I'm not going outside for the day, I put on my sunscreen. Yes, and it is good beauty. Not to be an ad, but I love it. Sunscreen all the time. And I think that's also something that my mom has done. My mom is, approaching 80. And, people would probably think that she's, in her mid-60s.
I would agree. I did not know that your mom...
50 next year.
I mean, wow. SPF. Wow. Those are good. And I will just say mine probably is very similar to Jay. I always will have on an SPF 50 no matter what. And I definitely use my own brand. But I will say my other, not just so I won't piggyback on Jay. I drink a lot of water. I'm constantly going to the bathroom. I mean, I use 3 liters of water, and drink it every day. And I try. And again, I think water definitely is one of those things that simple, free, but we just don't get enough of. So water. Well, I want to thank you, ladies. Again, this is Kimberly Harrison Hicks with Good Women Win. If you're watching, please remember to follow the Good Beauty page and also follow these ladies, because they always are, they're very interesting on Instagram, and I learn a lot about beauty and black beauty from these ladies. So thank you. Hope you guys have a happy Friday.
Bye.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
President Trump touting a ceasefire agreement reached with the Turkish government when it comes to the fighting in Syria.
Without a little tough love, they would have never made this deal.
The president making those remarks at a rally in Dallas last night. But Democratic 2020 White House hopeful Senator Kamala Harris sees things very differently.
He made a unilateral decision based on a phone call to pull our troops out. And everything that has happened as a result was predictable and a crisis of Donald Trump's making.
Meanwhile, despite the ceasefire agreement, there appears to be no end to the fighting on the border between Syria and Turkey. The first all-female spacewalk continues. American astronauts Christina Cook and Jessica Meyer are outside the International Space Station. They're repairing a power controller. And this is USA Radio News.
So there's this guy named Jordan, and he's a healthy guy. He's a dad of 6, and he works as a guide in Alaska. But then he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage 4. And here's the thing. He had switched from medical insurance to MediShare, which is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry. So the question for Jordan and his wife Jenny was, is this really going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. If you want to find out more, here's a number for you. 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
Walking back some of his earlier comments, acting White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney says there was no quid pro quo with Ukraine. He said that a few hours after appearing to confirm yesterday to reporters that military aid to Ukraine was in fact held up over requests from the Trump administration that Ukraine investigate Democrats.
Did he also mention to me in the past that the corruption related to the DNC server? Absolutely. No question about that. But that's it. And that's why we held up the money.
Mulvaney later saying that the president never told him to withhold money until Ukrainians investigated a theory about Ukraine being involved in a cover-up over the hacking of a Democratic National Committee server. A key House committee approving Speaker Nancy Pelosi's sweeping drug pricing measure. The bill the House Energy and Commerce panel approved last evening would allow Medicare to negotiate lower prices on as many as 250 expensive drugs a year. This is USA Radio News.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
Chicago public classrooms will be empty again today. It's day two of a Chicago teachers union strike. 32,000 teachers and aides walking picket lines. The Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot says that it means classes will be canceled until the strike ends, as teachers are striking over pay and benefits, class sizes, teacher prep time. They also want more support staff like nurses, librarians, counselors, and school psychologists. The Trump administration will reportedly host next year's G7 meeting at President Trump's Doral Resort in Miami. The acting chief of staff, Mick Mulvaney, saying the resort was chosen during a selection process that narrowed down 12 locations to four finalists, and they decided the Trump National Doral Miami is perfect for its needs. He says the president's agreed to host it at cost, so it will be millions of dollars cheaper than any of the other finalists would charge. The meeting of leaders from the seven largest economies is scheduled for June 10th through the 12th next year. Dennis Rodman's in trouble for slapping someone's face. Reports are the Basketball Hall of Famer was charged with misdemeanor battery for a slapping incident last May at a bar in Delray Beach, Florida. He allegedly slapped another person twice in the face while celebrating his 59th birthday. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
Hello, my name is Robert Burns. My website is bobburnspeaks.com. And I'm inviting you to listen to my show at 1 o'clock on Friday afternoons on Hunter & Chamber Radio entitled Awaken to Your Purpose. How many people walk through life awake and knowing why they were incarnated here in this beautiful planet? Not a lot of people do. I was in my late 40s by the time I found out, but now I know. So listen to the show, and maybe that'll promote you to awaken to your purpose. And thank you so much.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunter and Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Greetings, Americans, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Toy Story 4, Child's Play, and Anna, plus a retro review of the Robin Williams Black Mirror-ish movie, The Final Cut from 2004. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup with a spotlight on the Universal Horror Collection Volume 1, featuring Karloff and Lugosi in The Black Cat, The Raven, The Invisible Ray, and Black Friday. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
A couple pieces of small news here that I wanted to hit. One of them is the fact that something I predicted earlier this year, and I'm absolutely right, and that is Avengers Endgame is going to be re-releasing into theaters, coinciding with Spider-Man Far From Home. Now, they're re-releasing it with a little bit of extra unseen footage. Apparently, there's some post-credit stuff that they're going to be doing, and to give a little extra goose to the box office. And the only reason they're really doing this, I mean, they're doing it maybe to cross-promote with Spider-Man, but the real reason they're doing this is that movie is just $45 million away from breaking the all-time worldwide record that Avatar holds, which is billions of dollars, but it's $45 million away. That's why it's going out back in theaters. And I don't know, it's not going to make that necessarily in America, but maybe worldwide it'll push it just enough over the finish line. And Disney has been known to keep things in the theaters just long enough to reach their milestones. Another piece of news, which I find perplexing, Jason Blum and Jamie Lee Curtis were taking pictures of themselves and tweeting it out going, "We're planning things," of course implying that they're getting ready to do another Halloween movie, which is great. I loved David Gordon Greer's Halloween. My biggest beef with this whole story isn't that they're planning the movie, isn't that they're planning on a fall shoot this year. It's supposed to start shooting in September, and it's not at all bothered by the fact that it has a 2020 release date, I'm assuming sometime in October, very similar to what happened with the Halloween movie they did last year. I'm all for that, and I love the fact that Jason Blum is following the 80s slasher business plan of cranking them out with short schedules and small budgets so you can have a series go through just a couple years, which is great. And that's exactly how movies like Halloween and Friday the 13th did so well in the 80s in the first place. My biggest beef is everyone's calling it Halloween 2, and I'm like, well, it's not Halloween 2. This last Halloween was a direct sequel to Halloween. That makes this last movie, if anything, Halloween 2. And is this one going to be Halloween 3? Figure out how you're going to name these stupid movies or just make it Halloween. Say, go see Halloween and just call it Halloween 2020. Because at this point, the Halloween movies are so insane with their titling that it makes no sense. But as long as you keep Rob Zombie as far away from this franchise as possible, I will be happy. The next piece of news I think is interesting that's coming out is that Suzanne Collins is already in the works of writing a new Hunger Games movie, which takes place, I think it's around the 10th Hunger Games, so it's well earlier than Katniss Everdeen existed. So you're not going to get Jennifer Lawrence in the movie, and I don't think you would have gotten it anyways. I think she would have been like, look guys, I fulfilled my contract on that, and I'm done. I mean, thank you, and it was great, and it propelled me to superstardom, but I got other things on my plate. And it's the same reason why she got out of the X-Men movies. I mean, that was great for her to be in the X-Men first class, but I think she's done with it, and she wants to move on. And maybe you'll see her in another superhero movie, but you're not going to see her in the new Hunger Games. This is a prequel, and it reminds me a lot of what's going on with the Harry Potter universe films. Now, of course, a lot of this is just because they want to generate more money. Apparently, Suzanne Collins bought a new house or a new car or needs to make a payment on something or just wants some more cash. And that's fine. Go ahead, knock yourself out. I'm all for that. If I wrote The Hunger Games, I'd be writing prequels already. But here's my prediction on this one. It's going to be very similar to the Fantastic Beast movies that have had diminishing returns. The first Fantastic Beast did well. did better overseas, but it did okay, but it wasn't nearly as strong as the other Harry Potter movies. And this second one, The Crimes of Grindelwald, that one also had a slower start in America. Actually, I don't even think it made $200 million in America. And overseas, it's the lowest of the Harry Potter movies. And there might be one excluding, but I think it's actually the lowest grossing of the Wizarding World movies. And I have a feeling you're going to get that with The Hunger Games, because you're going to have somebody to replace Jennifer Lawrence, because she was integral to that series. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is the Banana Split Show movie, which opens on August 13th on digital, and I think it's coming out on DVD and Blu-ray at the end of August.
Who's excited to see the Banana Split? Yeah!
Vodka, vodka, vodka. Rebecca, I'm canceling the show.
What?
Hey, kids, put on your happiest faces, because the Banana Split Show is about to begin.
Why are you doing this to me?
Now the show can go on forever and ever and ever.
I remember the Banana Splits when I was a little kid. It was an early 70s cartoon, this sort of wraparound variety show thing that was as not quite as psychedelic as the Sid and Marty Krofft stuff, like H.R. Puff and stuff or anything like that. But it was still bonkers and crazy. And what they do is they'd have these little sketches and almost like a children's laugh-in, where they have these little sketches that tied together short films and cartoons. And they had this TV series called Danger Island, which was actually pretty terrible, but kind of cool. And it was like directed by, like, I think Richard Donner at the time, who went on to direct Superman and the Lethal Weapon films. There were just kiddie things. And I remember they actually had the series of them. In the credits, they'd be driving around or running around Kings Island, which is, you know, within driving distance. I go to Kings Island every year with my kids. And I remember going there in the 70s. And the Brady Bunch went to Kings Island. It showed up in a lot of stuff in the 70s because it was and it still is a fantastic amusement park. But the difference is with this one is this is going to be a monster movie. This is a scary film. They're basically making the Banana Splits like a Five Nights at Freddy's movie, where the giant puppet-type creatures attack people and kill them, and it turns into a horror movie, which has me fascinated. Because this stuff kind of was a horror movie at the beginning. I mean, if you look at Bingo Flegel, Drooper, and Snork, these were monstrous nightmare fuel creatures that were in plush outfits that if any child saw on the street, they would run screaming into their parents' arms. I could get into this. Like I said, the idea of a Five Nights at Freddy's movies has always intrigued a lot of fanboys, and I think it could be cool. This might be a nice way to dip your toe into it and see how well it does work. The next one I want to hit really quickly is Good Boys, which opens on August 16th.
I'm having a party tomorrow. You in?
Yeah.
Can Thor and Lucas come? They're so random. They're my best friends. We do everything together.
There's so many girls at the party. You know what that means?
Drama.
No. Kissing.
You do not want to go to Soren's party not knowing how to kiss.
We could spy on my neighbor. She's a total nymphomaniac.
She starts fires.
This is what happens when you don't respect women.
I respect women. My mom's my best friend.
What about me?
I have always sort of come and gone with my affinity towards these movies of kids doing inappropriate things on an all-night or all-day bender type thing. Superbad was funny, but some of these movies can get kind of, I don't know, a nihilistic, or I don't appreciate some of them, even when I was a kid, you know, stuff like, what was the one, The Wildlife or something like that? I've never been wild on these. The one reason I think this might be kind of fun is because these kids are actually way too young, and everything that seems to be happening around them, they have no idea what it is. And it's them in these inappropriate situations, but literally not have enough experience, which I think plays to the comedy better, as opposed to having, like, that movie mid-90s that came out last year, where you got this 11 or 12-year-old that's talking about doing extremely inappropriate stuff I can't say on the radio. So, anyways, I'm looking forward to that one. This one could be funny, but who knows? August release, never know. And that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Child's Play and Anna.
So you sit down and do your budget, And you look at all your monthly costs and your bills and your income, and it seems like there's never quite enough. You know what would really help? Finding $500 a month to help balance things out. That is the typical savings. $500 a month for a family when you switch to MediShare for your health care. And when it comes to healthcare sharing ministries, MediShare is really the gold standard. It's been around for 25 years and has more than 400,000 members. It's been around so long and grown so much because it works. And whether you're single or married or have kids, this could make sitting down to do a monthly budget a lot more fun. $500 a month can more than cover a car payment or payback loans, whatever. So join MediShare and go out to dinner to celebrate. Here's the number to call. They are incredibly kind and helpful to talk to. 855-90-BIBLE. That's 855-90-BIBLE. 855-90-BIBLE.
Mike Hewitt here. Let's change the subject. Are you an employee or an employer, a coach, a negotiator, a manager, a salesperson? Need help navigating this new world we all find ourselves in? Learn from more than three decades of direct management and negotiating experience and a professor of business management. Politics? You betcha. Understanding the politics of business is crucial